This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In 1977, my guest Mark Knopfler took the plunge and quit his secure teaching job to form a rock band. The band's name described the members' financial situation, dire straits. That situation turned around quickly when a demo tape the band sent to a London DJ won them a recording contract, and the song Sultans of Swing became a top 10 hit in the U.S. Dire Straits has continued its success over the years with such hits as Money for Nothing, Walk of Life, and Skate Away. Mark Knopfler is the lead singer, guitarist, and songwriter for the band. He's also composed the scores for several films, including Local Hero, Cal, and The Princess Bride, as well as the soon-to-be-released Last Exit to Brooklyn. He's produced albums for Bob Dylan and Aztec Camera, performed on albums by Randy Newman and Steely Dan, and wrote Tina Turner's hit Private Dancer. Knopfler's latest project is a band called the Notting Hillbillies. Their new album, Missing, Presumed Having a Good Time, will be released in March. It features classic songs and original material inspired by early rock and roll, gospel, blues, and country and western. I asked Mark Knopfler what different aspects of his guitar playing came out in playing with the Notting Hillbillies.
A lot of the music, a lot of these older things, of course it's acoustic music, so you get all your acoustic guitars a good airing, and you get back to picking a lot, and there's been lots of room to try all kinds of anti-purist ideas, sling in influences from Africa and from everywhere. I mean, we'd do anything really as long as it worked. So I'm sure the train spotters won't, Bluegrass Brigade might not really like the record as such, because it's not a historic, I mean, it's not a reconstruction really. Although one or two of the tunes have sort of resisted any innovation, but generally speaking, they've been changed around a lot.
What's a song that you think illustrates the anti-purist approach you've taken to songs?
Oh, I think a very good example would be Railroad Work Song.
Good, why don't we hear some of that?
Okay.
Working on the railroad for $1 a day. Working on a railroad for $1 a day. Working on a railroad, good buddy, for $1 a day. Gotta get my money, gotta get my pay. Take this hammer, take it to the captain. Take this hammer, take it to the captain. Take this hammer, good buddy. Take it to the captain. Tell him I'm gone. Tell him I'm gone.
That's Railroad Work Song from the new group, the Notting Hillbillies, with my guest Mark Knopfler, featured on guitar. And Mark Knopfler is the founder, lead singer, and guitarist of the British rock group Dire Straits. You're best known for Dire Straits. You were 28 years old when the group had its first hit, The Sultans of Swing. I think before that you taught English, you'd been a journalist. Had you given up on being a professional musician?
No, the teaching job saved my life. I was trying to be a professional musician, and I ended up teaching for 3 years because it enabled me to get my own transport and to be able to play nights with rock and roll bands and stuff. So it was actually one of the best things I think that happened teaching, and it also enabled me to, because of the summer breaks in 76, I managed to get myself all the way around America.
Did the students know that their teacher was a rock guitarist?
Yes, I'm afraid so, because we used to play there at the college quite a bit too, and they'd get to see Mark jumping up and down in the air in a white suit.
Did you come up with the name of Dire Straits?
No, it was another starving musician who was living in the drummer's house. He was a pianist, only met him once, and he'd come up with that.
Did you like the name right away?
Yes. It made all kinds of sense. Apart from anything else, the state, I seem to remember, the general consensus in England at the time was that the country was in that situation anyway. So, and it was pretty much applicable to us because we'd given up our jobs, and we were those of us who had jobs, the three of us who had jobs, and we were living on quite a lot of lentil soup.
Mm-hmm. The band's first hit, at least in America, was Sultans of Swing, which I think was 1978 when it came out.
That's right.
The story, the lyrics are about a trad jazz band that they all have day jobs and they play on the weekends, and they're good musicians and this is their big release. Were you afraid that you were going to become the rock equivalent of that, where you'd have a day job and on the weekends you could let loose and play?
I was worried. I remember sometimes going to work and thinking, crikey, this isn't going to be me. And yes, and I just knew that it wasn't going to be the picture. And I mean, I didn't have the, although I enjoyed teaching, I enjoyed my students, and I got them through all their exams and everything, I took my marking quite seriously, I remember. But I didn't have that professional commitment to it that's required. It was the same really for journalism. I can't see really say it was journalism. It was more of cub reporting, which I did for a couple of years before I went to university, that you've got to be compulsive about it. And it was a job that I could do. I had a lot of energy and drive when I was 18, 19. And I couldn't get that excited about getting a scoop or something.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have it sort of printer's ink in your veins. You've got to have that compulsion. And really, the compulsion with me has always been to stay up late playing and falling asleep with the guitar. In fact, that's how John met me. I know one of the guys in the band met me. I remember down in Deptford was just him coming. He'd been out all night. He came in the morning, and there I was in his flat, lying on the floor. With a guitar across. That was basically what used to happen. You'd fall asleep just playing licks until essentially you're playing in your sleep.
Was there an actual band that you saw that you wrote Sultans of Swing about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what they called themselves.
That was really their name?
Yeah, that's right. When you say good musicians, they were the classic little trad band playing New Orleans is a pretty. You'd get them. You'd get them in a lot of pubs and places around England. There's postmen and maths teachers and whatever it is that they do, and they just get together and play Louis Armstrong solos if they can.
Well, why don't we listen to Sultans of Swing? This record from 1978. Dire Straits. My guest Mark Knopfler wrote the song. He plays lead guitar, sings vocals, and here it is.
Shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park, but meantime, sound of the river, you stop and you hold everything. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside. In other places, but the horns, they blowing that sound way on down south.
My guest is Mark Knopfler. He's the founder, lead singer, guitarist, and songwriter of the British rock band Dire Straits. Now, you were telling me that this record, Sultans of Swing, was actually not even played on British radio while it was a hit in the U.S.
That's right. It was a hit all over the world. In fact, But then the Radio 1 in England, which, of course, you know, you have 2 million radio stations in America at that point. At that time, I think we had one in England, the BBC. And pop records were subject to the scrutiny of a committee headed by a lady called Doreen or something, this peroxide thing, and she sort of chaired this committee, and they turned Sultans of Swing down as a candidate for the British public because, and I quote, it had too many words.
Really? What was that supposed to mean exactly?
I never even bothered to find out. And then it became a hit there about a year later.
How did it become a hit if it wasn't played on BBC?
I think once it had become a hit in America, they were sort of it. And then there was a show that played American, the American top, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when it was the number one in America, then they sort of had to start playing it. I think they must have had a call or two or something. I really don't know. But then anyway, eventually we became mightily popular in the UK and remain so to this day, despite Doreen. Or Doris. I think it's Doreen. It was.
What were some of the stories about who you really were that circulated in the States that really seemed absurd to you after Sultans of Swing was released? Or impressions of who you were and who you'd patterned yourself on?
I don't remember any of that at all. People used to talk about influences, of course, and which are absolutely true, that people would... simply because I'm not a singer. It has a sort of a Dylan-esque influence and sound to it, and I think that's absolutely right. Bob Dylan been an influence on me since I was 11 years old first heard that.
Did he influence you in part because you didn't think of yourself as a singer? Did he almost like give you permission to sing?
It could be partly that I didn't think of myself as a singer. You're right. And in fact, I still don't.
Well, you kind of developed this half-speaking, half-singing style of doing vocals.
Well, it's probably just really from not being able to sing, and that's the top and the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the guitar would end up probably taking over where the voice just couldn't go. And it's not so much a question of running out of words. I just probably couldn't... couldn't sing too well, and can't. So that's just the way that it is.
We were talking about your singing. Let's talk a little bit about your guitar playing. I think it's very easy to identify your guitar sound on a record. Was there a point where you realized you had your own sound, your own voice, after probably trying to imitate a lot of your influences and heroes?
Yes, I proceeded along a couple of lines, as parallel lines of acoustic playing and electric playing, because I couldn't afford an amplifier in the early stages, but I was stuck with this electric guitar that I had to have. I borrowed friends' acoustic guitars and ended up playing in folk joints and eventually in small blues places as well, clubs and so on and so forth. Eventually picking styles and flat pick styles and finger picking styles synthesized, and ended up using a flat pick less and less. And the synthesis of different kinds of music and different styles of playing, and that's really when it all came about after playing for 7 or 8 years. Eventually the style, what people would say is a style developed, and it's style is something that you can't define, you can only recognize it, but that's what happened.
You grew up in Glasgow and then in, what, Northern England?
Yeah, well, I was born in Glasgow, but when I was about 6 or 7, I moved to Newcastle-on-Tyne, which is a northeast, people from Newcastle are called Geordies, and that's really what I consider myself to be, from the northeast.
Your father was a refugee, he had fled Hungary, I think in the 1940s?
Yeah, end of the 30s, yeah.
Why did he flee, and what effect did that have on you when you were growing up to a father who was from another country? And I don't know if he spoke English very well when you were growing up.
Well, no, he had English pretty well off. He always spoke with an accent. But,
uh-huh.
He was just part of the general refugee movement in Europe, across Europe at that time, and he married a Geordie girl. And so I just grew up basically the same as all the other kids, in local schools and everything else. But I'm very glad that, in a way, that I had one parent who was an outsider to a certain extent, because I think it sharpens your perception of, you get the advantage of a different point of view on English life, British life, if you like, all the time. That, I think, has been important.
Let me ask you about another song that you wrote for Dire Straits, and this is Money for Nothing. This is a persona song. It's written in the persona of someone who works for an appliance store, installing kitchens and moving TVs and refrigerators. And he thinks that rock musicians really have it easy. They get their money for nothing and their chicks for free just by playing guitar and maybe getting a blister on their finger. Were you frustrated by people who envied rock musicians because the life was so easy? I mean, does that bother you?
No. No, it was just one of those situations. The guy was an ignoramus, obviously.
Well, what guy? Who was he that you modeled this on?
He was real enough. He was in the store. It was a New York store.
An appliance store?
Yeah, and I was just there. We were there looking for some kind of appliance, something for the kitchen. And it was actually all going on. There was a wall of TV sets at the back, and these rows of refrigerators and gas stoves and God knows what, and there was a kitchen display unit in the front of the store in the window, sort of a model kitchen. In fact, after I saw all this going down, I actually borrowed a piece of paper and a pen from somebody in the store, and I sat in the kitchen display area in the window of the store, and started writing down some of these things that this guy was saying, you know, because they were such classic lines.
Such as, what are some of the things he actually said that you used in the song?
That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Maybe you get a blister on your finger or something. And a lot of the language, of course, I couldn't really. It was a lot worse than I mean, in sound checks, I might sing some of the. Sometimes I might just use some of the real language, but I think most people got the picture, and it's a kind of a. Most people, I would think, were amused by it more than anything else. And there's a grain of truth, of course, in what he's saying, because there is that perception. Sometimes it's accurate. Some people in music, of course, don't work very hard, and they just are there, and everything's really more or less done for them. But generally speaking, I think it's just as hard as anything else. And people work, a lot of musicians work very hard.
One more thing about Money for Nothing. This fellow in the appliance store, did he recognize you? Is that what led to...
Oh, no, I was actually spying on him. I had to find... I didn't want to get too close because it was such a classic situation. He had his little audience of two, and he was just away. And I had to sort of back off a little bit because he couldn't be seen to be saying what he was saying, maybe in front of the customer. So I actually found a little sort of spy hole in between a couple of microwaves and down one of the alleys, and just sort of watched him for a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear Money for Nothing, and this is Dire Straits.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working, that's the way you do it. Let me tell you, damn guys ain't dumb. Maybe get a blister on your little finger. Maybe get a blister on your thumb. We got to install microwave ovens, custom kitchen deliveries. We got to move these refrigerators. We got to move these color TVs.
That's Dire Straits, and my guest is the founder, leader, lead guitarist, and lead singer of Dire Straits, Mark Knopfler. You're pretty famous both in the United States and in England. Do you think that British and American fans kind of want different things or expect different things?
No,
from their rock stars.
Well, if you were to watch MTV all the time or something, I think you would be very easy to get depressed about expectations and output and giving people what they want and so on and so forth. And I think probably the conservatism in American rock and roll is one of the most obvious things when you see these clone groups playing and posing around in their PVC suits and so on and so forth.
Did anyone ever try to make you into a clone of somebody else?
No.
Have you ever had to resist that?
No, I think being successful from the beginning has meant that the record companies, God bless them, have never really lent on me to go in any particular direction. And I mean, I haven't made it easy for management and people like that by being sidetracked so much with dreaming other people's dreams and getting involved in production things and doing all this film stuff. To be fair, I think that I should be doing a little bit less of that and concentrating more on keeping Dire Straits intact and, you know, getting another record out and going around the world, which I'm actually looking forward to doing, in fact.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Mark Knopfler is the leader of the band Dire Straits. He also plays with the new band, the Notting Hillbillies, and their first album is about to be released on Warner Brothers. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.